You're listening to Why Try, the podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Peel, and each week I sit down with entrepreneurs, artists, and others who have found that betting on themselves has made all the difference.
Jeff Beasley started his garden, now known as Bella Madrona, 37 years ago as a hobby. It's brought him and his visitors a lot of joy over the years, and it's given him some really neat life experiences. I say this a lot on the podcast, but it's amazing what can unfold when you start doing something you have a passion for, or even something that you like just on a lark because it seems neat, and that can turn into a passion, which seems like it was the case for Jeff. After the interview, Jeff gave me a tour of his garden, and I've included a little clip where he talked about my favorite part of the garden, and that'll be at the beginning, and then after that you'll hear Jeff introduce himself. I hope you'll enjoy our conversation about his garden, Bella Madrona.
This is the moon garden, and it's meant to have pale flowers that are visible at night and in the moonlight. And there's a terrace here that's the crescent moon with the when the foliage is all gone, you can see the man in the moon's face. I always consider this kind of the heart of the garden. It kind of looks down over the wild part of the garden.
Also, before we get too far into this, I should note that we are recording this in his garden. And you'll occasionally hear sound like a rooster or something in the background, or either of his two dogs like snuffling around near us. But I don't think it's too intrusive, so I left a lot of it in too because I think it kind of adds to the feeling of being in the garden.
I'm Jeff Beasley, and I've lived in Sherwood for 37 years. I'm a retired physician. I started a garden here in Sherwood 37 years ago, and that's basically what I do now. I'm a full-time gardener.
The garden's name is?
Bella Madrona.
How did you come to that name, by the way?
Actually, I had a little party at a friend's house, and we had a whiteboard, and everybody shouted out names. And there's a lot of native trees here called madrones, and they're very beautiful. And somebody shouted out Bella Madrona, and that stuck.
What motivated you to start this?
It's kind of hard to say. I don't think there was any motivation. I think the thing that I wanted was a 5-acre piece of property kind of out in the country with a little old farmhouse. And so we kind of looked for that when we first moved up here. And then I started doing a few gardens here and there, but it wasn't until I met a kind of an underemployed landscape designer who had moved back here from Long Island, and became very good friends with him. We started working together and just started creating gardens one after another and expanding across the property. So it was kind of an organic process and really wasn't planned to start with.
It's since become fairly well recognized. When did you start to see that happen, or how did that happen?
We started having parties back in the early 80s, even before the garden was started. We started having parties that kind of became bigger and bigger every year. So it was we had already kind of established it as a place. And then the gardens started being developed during a time in the 80s when Portland was just beginning to be recognized as a kind of a hotbed of horticulture. Michael, the landscape designer that was still here at that time, was very in tune to all the new plants that were coming out from China and Japan and all over the place, South America. And we started creating these gardens with all sorts of unusual plants, and Hardy Plant Society and other organizations took note. We were kind of centerpiece of their tours for a number of years, and then magazines started hearing about it, and there was kind of a rush in the mid-90s of magazine articles and coffee table books. It seems like everybody was rushing to do a story on Bella Madrona, so it was like this.
Why do you think that was?
Back then, in Portland, we probably were the centerfold of gardening. There were some older gardens that were awfully nice and historic, but this one was kind of recognized as a kind of on the cutting edge of a new style of gardening.
Can you expand on that a little bit? Like, what's the style?
Well, it's kind of hard to say, but it was called the Northwest style, and I never really understood exactly what it was, but I think it was keeping in tune with the natural environment, working with the ecosystems, planting plants that could withstand long periods of dry weather, which we have in the Northwest in the summertime. I don't know. I never really understood exactly what the Northwest style is. But I apparently was on the forefront of it.
So when you guys started hosting events, what were some of the early events that you guys did?
let's see, the first couple of things we did were wedding parties. And then we started just having regular parties, but then where we just invited all of our friends over. And then we started having benefits. And early on, through the late 80s and the 90s, I think there was at least one big benefit, like Planned Parenthood or Humane Society. We kind of concentrated in environmental causes and human rights and animal rights and the arts. Those were kind of...
Right in that Portland wheelhouse.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of different organizations would call and we'd do do benefits for them through the years. The latest one this year was Regional Arts and Culture Council, which handles all the art tax money in Portland and distributes money to different arts organizations throughout the state.
To what extent is the Garden business?
I started charging before for, I think I've done about 28 weddings out here, and the first maybe 20 of them, it was just friends and friends of friends, and I never charged anything, which was ridiculous because it was an incredible expense to keep the garden up. So I started charging people a few years ago, and then I decided that maybe I would make a business out of it. I have a website. That kind of fell through because I was worried about the liabilities of people coming to this garden unless it was by word of mouth or had some kind of personal connection to me. Because the garden itself at this point is 37 years old and it was all handmade, you know, at the start, and all the hardscapes and everything are starting to show decrepitude. And so far there's been no injuries, but if a drunk Uncle Fred in somebody's wedding stumbled, I'm worried about the liability. So I'm kind of backing away from a business model and back into the kind of more word of mouth thing. But I am charging money, and I expect to get a certain amount of money every year from doing these events so I can afford more help in the garden.
How did you get into gardening?
I always had a little garden when I was growing up. Nothing special, like a little corner of my parents' yard or something. And I kind of made my little money mowing other people's yards. So I was always kind of out in the garden, but I never really thought about that being a way of life. And even when I had this property for the first number of years, I really had no idea it was going to become such a big deal. Right now, I'd consider that it's that I'm really kind of identified with the garden, that it's been my number one passion throughout my life, and I had no idea that that was going to happen. I think it just kind of occurred naturally. So,
would you mind sharing a couple of favorite events that you guys have hosted over the years?
Sure. We had a big party. First of all, Pink Martini, which is a local orchestra in Portland, has played out here for about 8 different occasions, and even wrote a song on their second CD about the garden, called The Gardens of Sampson and Beasley. So any number of those events where they played would be among my favorite. There were two of them that occurred in the 2005 and 2008 that were fundraisers for. The first one was for Pacific Northwest College of Art, and the second one was Oregon College of Art and Craft. And my partner, husband Jim, and I were on the boards of both those art groups, so we had big fundraisers with Pink Martini. Those were very special parties, but before that, we would have just private parties. There was one called the Ring of Fire, where we had, it was a fire theme all over the garden. Even had a big ring of fire out in the field with, like, a volcano. There was another party where it was dedicated to animal spirits of the garden, and there were we had two different dance troupes performing throughout the evening. At one point, there were people hanging from ropes through in the trees, dressed in leopard skin, you know, Tarzan outfits, and that was a very nice party. And then we had one where someone who was a playwright owed us a favor, and he wrote a play, which was basically a tour of the garden given by an old English gardener called Lady Quaintance Wanger, and she was played by a well-known actress in town at that point, Lee Clark Granville, and she made garden tours around the garden, and the first garden tour occurred at 6 o'clock in the evening, and there were about 20 people that followed her. And the second one was at 7 o'clock, and about 80 people followed her. And then the last one, almost everybody here, and it was probably 200 people here, were following her around doing this little garden tour, which was very fun, very funny. But that's probably my favorite party that we had.
How did you and Pink Martini get connected?
We knew Thomas Lauderdale, who was the band leader when he was a teenager. And I think one time we were sitting outside a restaurant in Portland, and we were planning a party, and he stopped by and said, "Oh, we'll play." And at that point, they had just put together the band, so it was brand new. And it just became a favorite place for them to come. They never charged me anything. I'm assuming that they could get $75,000 for a performance. But so they were very special, because these were the full band, and it was a very intimate, you know, location, and you know, only a couple hundred people. So
how do you think about success for the garden?
Success for the garden. Well, this space, first of all, the land that the garden was on, it just seems to have a really good feng shui about it. The trees on it are very beautiful. It's got nice vistas, and it just has a really good feeling to it. And the garden has kind of absorbed that good feeling. And when people come here, they always say that they feel that something special, very healing for people that are having difficult times in their lives. I've been told many times they come out here and they really feel a healing presence. And it's just kind of a magical place. And I think when people feel that, and during events, it just seems like the garden kind of does that on its own. It just puts this glow out that is very tangible, and when people come to these events, they are constantly talking about how magical the whole scene is, and that's what I would think is, to me, is the most successful part of it.
Has it changed at all how you think about life and what you want out of life?
Yeah, that's difficult because it's been such a process, a lifelong process, that's really been the person that I was when I was age 30 and started this. Is I'm a completely different person now. I'm not sure if the garden itself caused that or if we kind of grew up together. I think that's probably the way it is more. Instead of the garden changing me, we've just kind of grown up together. And
What do you think it is about, I guess, like nature and being around like life, plants and stuff, that is so good for people?
Yeah, I think it definitely grounds them. I think animals, and we have chickens running all over right now. They've kind of taken over the property in the last 8 months. But we've had animals here all along, farm animals. We don't have any more. I don't have a horse anymore. We had goats and all that kind of thing. But just seeing the animals, like the hawks nesting and all that kind of thing, I think it just gives people a different, or gives me at least, a different or a more wholesome view of reality as opposed to what we see in the daily news. I just think it's much more real, much more grounding.
So what do you see in the future of this place?
Oh, that's a very intriguing question. That's a real problem right now because, as I said, I'm getting old, 67. I'm unable to do a lot of the hard labor that I used to. I built all the rock walls myself and all that kind of thing. I need to hire people to do anything on a ladder now. It really costs a lot of money to run this place. I don't know how much more I will be able to financially take care of this garden, and not only financially but physically. So there's a real problem that I'm going through right now, trying to figure out how I'm going to separate myself from the garden, because it's been such a big part of my identity. And everybody that I know, the first thing they ask is, "How's the garden?" And I know one of these days I've got to give it up, because we all die eventually. And before that, I'm sure I'll be disabled by age. So one of these days, I'm going to have to make a big decision. I have no idea what's going to happen in the future. One thing I know is that when a garden owner and creator goes away, it completely changes. It's an ethereal thing, and it's not going to last forever. Perhaps someone will buy this that's interested in keeping it up, but they'll have to either be crazy like me or be able to afford to buy pay somebody to keep it up, because it's an incredible amount of work. But I would say probably what will happen is that the property will be sold and the garden will deteriorate and go away. I don't anticipate it staying for a long period of time, but it's been here for me, so that makes it worthwhile.
Would you consider a situation where you sell the area outside of your house to some other group so you don't have to worry about the liability and they handle...
Make a nonprofit or something. I don't know whether that's legal, because we live in a 20-acre minimum zoning zone. So I've actually talked it over with my accountant before about doing something similar to that. And it might be possible, and a lot of people are... There are several different groups of people actually that are trying to come up with an idea of ways to preserve the garden and keep it going, and to allow me to continue to live in the house, but the garden be used as an event space. And I'm open to all those ideas that these people are coming up with, and perhaps one of them will work. I think I can get around the liability issue. I think the problem with that, when I decided I didn't want to do that business because of liability, was just because of weddings, and weddings are so weird. The brides are so weird, and
it's an emotional...
Yeah, everything has to be perfect, and these people aren't used to putting on events, so they kind of don't have an idea really of what it takes to put on an event. I think if I did corporate events like dinner parties in the garden, things like that, and got paid for that, then that would be something I could do and get around the liability issues. And I'm worried about weddings, just that particular liability.
I mean, it seems like it's definitely a priority for, and I think there's probably a lot of other people that would share that as a priority, to like keep the garden flourishing and keep your presence in it.
Well, there's a lot of people that are very interested in that, and perhaps somebody will come up with an idea. I'm willing to listen.
How did you decide what to plant in the garden?
Well, early on, I was kind of mentored by Michael, who had a lot of plant knowledge. On one hand, I kind of would rather artists come to the garden rather than garden people, because garden people a lot of times center in on a plant, and they'll just go down and center down on a plant itself. And the way I really think of this garden is more as a whole, and the plants are just little pieces of it, little brush strokes.
They're literally not seeing the forest for
exactly.
The trees.
Exactly. That's kind of one of my complaints. I mean, maybe that's not a legitimate complaint, because I think there would be a lot of garden people that have been here that say that I'm wrong about that, that they see it as a whole as well. But I'd say in general, they have less ability to see the whole than, you know, people like artists that don't really know what plants are. They just kind of, they don't pay attention to the individual plant as much as the whole scene.
Is there any elitism in the gardening culture?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. So back now, with this garden being so huge and me being so old, a lot of little individual areas of the garden are not... If you just looked at a 10-foot square piece of the garden, any gardener that came would say, oh, my 10-foot square piece of this plant is so much better grown than this person. What is the big deal about this garden? Because this 10 square, you know, place is not as good as what I could do. So yeah, there's a lot of elitism and competition. I'd say competition is even a better word. Everybody competes to have the best grown plant.
What is it about Bella Madrona that thwarts that?
The fact that it's so large, everything can't be perfect. The hedges are trimmed, but they're not kept trimmed. I mean, I can only do them, you know, a couple of them. Some of them need to be done two or three times a year, really, to be done right. But if I had a small garden, it would be all the time they'd be trimmed. So I think just the fact that it's a large garden makes it a lot looser and more approachable. I think more it's just the feeling that's here that people get when they come here, and it's kind of an It's kind of it's intangible to a certain way, but it's tangible also. It's definitely something you can feel, but you don't really know what it is that's causing the special feeling. So, you know, that's kind of anti-elitist, maybe.
Yeah, there's a certain informality to it.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely informal. Yeah, it's kind of loose and blousy, a lot of it, and nature kind of takes on its own editing hand. It's so big that I can't pick and choose. Nature has to kind of do its own thing, and I'm just kind of sitting back and editing a little bit.
Kind of guiding it?
Yeah. So it's not very self-conscious, I'll put it that way. It's not... it's done with much more feeling, I think, than if I was really directing it myself and saying, okay, I'm going to put this plant here and this plant here. And so that lack of self-consciousness, I think, is important.
Do you have to deal with any things like deer?
Yeah, deer. Deer come through and nibble here and there. I don't really have as much problem with deer as people always talk about. I don't know. I welcome all the critters. First of all, I would never try to get rid of any of the critters. I know people that try to get rid of their squirrels and all that, and I don't. I say any animal that lives here is just as much right as anybody else to live here. That's why the chickens, that's why there's 24 chickens running wild. But one thing we haven't had is predators this year, and that's why the chickens are, there's so many chickens, is because we've had always coyotes all over the place, hawks, nesting hawks, visiting eagles, all that. They've all this year completely disappeared. Nobody in this whole countryside hears coyotes anymore, and nobody really knows why, but it just all happened this year. And so there's no more predators for the chickens. So I don't know whether they'll come back this winter or not. Nobody hears them anymore. I've asked farmers all down in that area, and everybody says, yeah, you know, we don't hear them anymore. So you hear about them all the time right in town, so maybe they've all moved into town and left the countryside. I don't know. There has been a cougar around here, and he was actually down at the pond maybe about 6 months ago, seen by a few people. So maybe cougar around is like scared away the other predators. We do have two bobcats that live down at the pond. They've kind of taken up residence there. But I don't think they come up here. They're pretty skittish. I don't think they'd come get chickens. But in general, this has been a completely organic garden for forever, and I don't have any pests, any insect pests at all. Never have. Yeah, never have. Never used any pesticides or anything.
How often do you have people to the garden these days?
Well, let's see. I've had two big events this summer with 150 or 200 people, and then a bunch of little smaller benefits. I'm not really on the garden tour circuit anymore. People have tended to kind of forget about this garden because there's so many other wonderful gardens in Portland. When garden tours are organized, they kind of forget about this one. I do have one little garden tour coming next week, and then another kind of a party for 150 people later in the month. But typically, I would say in between these events, hardly ever anybody come here. It's totally my space, I guess. I love it when people come, and I'm kind of upset when it's so beautiful and nobody's really enjoying it other than me, but that's kind of the way it's become. Yeah, I think the traffic, you know, the traffic in this area has just gotten so bad, and I live out on the outskirts. It's just, and also Sherwoodians don't seem to know much about the garden. I think they're kind of figuring it out now. A lot more local people have come primarily because of Dax and Lawson's involvement in the restaurant in Old Town. They brought a lot of their customers and clients here, and people are starting to find out about it.
You guys ever thought about doing a dinner party, or maybe you guys already do it?
There's actually one coming up that was sold as a fundraiser for the Sherwood Cultural Arts Center, the Art Center, of which I'm on the board. And so that's going to be next weekend. There's going to be a brunch here that Mason is going to cater. But they're not really into catering, so I don't think they'd like to do it. It's only for 12 or 15 people. I don't think they'd want to do a bigger one.
It's a very one-time thing. Would you rent it out to like other like restaurants around Sherwood?
Yeah, sure. If there's all sorts of facilities for catering. I don't have good bathroom facilities. Most of the time for big events, they have to bring in portable bathrooms. But there's plenty of facility here. And as I said, I'm kind of interested in corporate events. So, and whether or not it would be Sherwood caterers or restaurants, there's not a whole lot of them in Sherwood, to tell you the truth. So it'd probably be more Portlander type restaurants or caterers.
Where should we send people if they want to find out more?
Well, I would say my Facebook page, Bella Madrona, would be a good place to message me if they were interested in coming or knowing more about it. And as far as anybody that hears this that knows of a corporate event that might want to take place out here, be sure and get in touch with me, because I do need to raise a certain amount of money to pay. I have a crew that comes every month or at most every 2 weeks. I'd like to eventually raise enough money with outside events to be able to afford to have them here every 2 weeks around the year. And I'm sure that's going to get more and more necessary the older I get. Right now I'm planning on being here at least till I'm 76, so another 9 years, and hopefully by that time I will have figured out a way to stay here longer.
Thanks for your time.
Oh, you're very welcome.
You can find Jeff in his garden on Facebook under Bella Madrona. Be sure to message him if you or someone you know might have an opportunity to keep the garden going in its fullest vibrancy for as long as possible. If you like the podcast, pick your favorite episode and share it with just one friend who you think might enjoy Why Try. There's a good variety to choose from, and I think it would really help the podcast grow so that we can keep bringing in fun and interesting guests. You can also help others discover Why Try by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. To get more information and be more engaged in the podcast, check out Why Try Podcast on Facebook. Music for this podcast is from Cambrian Explosion, who are to Portland's psychedelic rock scene what Genghis Khan was to the Mongols. Find them on iTunes, Spotify, and cepdx.bandcamp.com. Thanks for listening.